Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
We need some interaction to be able to do and be excited about it. And
don't cut that part out.
Don't cut that out.
I'm just kidding. You can cut out whatever you want.
Don't worry. Not a problem. I even leave in when I stumble through things, so we're good.
That's good.
Which I had to say this, by the way, was awesome that that first video, you actually – showed them that this is not taking a lot of editing. It's a one-shot video.
I tested it once.
And you went, oh, that was nice.
Like, oh, nice job. Way to mispronounce that word. Anyway, here we go.
And you move right on.
Still significantly shorter than if I did that in real life.
Oh, yes, especially because you would have had all those interruptions. You have all the other stuff going on.
I would have tried to tell a bunch of jokes. Because I'm just like, oh, this first thing in the morning, these people need jokes. They don't need jokes.
No.
They just need to move forward with their work. The activity that they do and the things they create is where the real learning happens. And the quickest we can get there, the better.
I love that, especially because being a former
–
talking about not being able to pronounce words. A former U.S. and world history teacher, you talked about – there's things that, you know, if you look at our at state standards, they usually talk about the rise and fall of Rome, you know, which part do you want me to spend the entire year on?
Right,
and
right.
And you have to figure out how to shorten that, which part of it is making you more efficient, and you show many different ways of doing that. Mm. But the boards allow that, which is awesome.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to do is, as we move through here is I've got to make sure that I say this because it was cool. You started today by saying, let's define differentiation by using the word engagement. I've just used my own words to say what you said. But can you talk about that a little bit, about getting the idea of getting kids engaged in the classroom, what we're talking about?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I really do think – you know, I'm going to expand my definition just a little bit. I know in that video I said engagement, but reflecting on that video as I in this room as I watched it back for the third time, I guess, I was thinking, you know, maybe we could expand it just a little bit because it's not only about engagement, but it's about also challenge. So it's an intersection of challenge and engagement.
Okay.
Because when I think of engagement, I think of figuring out ways, and again, we have very large and diverse classrooms. So you think about ways, how do I engage that student who is, you know, doesn't like school, doesn't like being there, who doesn't do well, has been always taught that they fail at school and they've sort of learned helplessness. Okay,
right.
I've got that student. And then all the way up to a student who's, again, very, very intelligent, high functioning, can fly through material. So I've got, that's my range. And that's a very difficult range. So differentiated instruction is simply, how do I design my classroom so I do my best to engage both of those students and everyone in between? I think that something like Howard Gardner's multiple intelligences gets us along the way to figuring that kind of thing out. Because if we realize that students have different learning styles, that the student who has been disengaged for their entire school experience, maybe they love drawing. They see the world, they're an amazing artist, but
right,
just the lecture-based classroom doesn't work for them. Figuring that out and realizing that some students are very strong in spatial intelligence. If we can design lessons that are built for that student to be able to express themselves and learn the content through their medium, that will highly engage and turn that student around and bring them back into the learning experience. Whereas you have a student who may be extremely bright, who loves listening to lectures, who does very, very well at that and excels and who's going to be a PhD student someday, you know, the 1%.
Right.
Because that's really what it is. That's 1% who are really great at listening to lectures and will eventually get a PhD. You know, figuring out a way to also meet their needs and push them beyond. And that's really what it's about. It's about figuring out what learning style students have and trying to meet those needs, but then also figuring out what level of challenge we can offer our students, because there may be students, for instance, ESL learners, who need to move very slowly. So the lower levels of rigor are probably more appropriate for them at the beginning. Of course, we want to push everybody to higher levels. There we go. Higher levels of rigor. That's hard to say. Try to say that.
Higher levels. Higher levels of rigor.
You mean higher levels of rigor. .com. Just took it. I don't know why. I just pointed at the microphone when I said
that's
that.
Nice. I'm waiting for it to point back at you.
It's just. Hey,
well, maybe it is.
I don't know. Yeah, it sort of is. But, you know, also figuring out what the appropriate level of challenge is for students. You know, maybe not everybody in the classroom is ready to create a video lecture of them teaching and then reflect on that, you know.
Right.
But I do think everybody in the class certainly would be able to do some assignment that, well, we could meet their level of rigor that they need and understand that some students aren't ready for the higher levels of rigor, but that we want everybody to get there, and if we can have some students doing the creating and publishing aspect, it will inspire others to want to work harder. Like, I want to be up on that screen. I want to be on YouTube, you know, and having those, the creating and publishing levels
right.
allow that sort of peer pressure to happen as well for students maybe who are less motivated. I've seen a number of instances, and I hate to make it about behavior, but a lot of time that's the case, that students aren't
mature.
Yeah, they're not mature enough to be given sort of a freedom assignment like that. So they stay at the lower levels, you know, understanding, remembering, and applying their learning, where I can go over and spend time with those students and help them. But they also see other students in the classroom doing the higher levels and who are mature enough to take on the responsibility of their own learning, and that can be a very powerful force. Did that answer your question? I feel like
it
got
did.
Way. What was the original question?
It was, why is the sky blue?
I answered it then. Yeah. Because I said so.
Yeah, because you said so. I like that, yes. Yeah. No, you did. We were talking about differentiation and engagement.
Sure.
And that was good. So,
okay.
Sorry, you're going to get me. This is why I have to keep myself focused.
Fair enough.
Get me way off track.
Glad one of us is.
I got to tell you, you're extremely talented. And
I'll go on.
Seriously, man. And what was cool was today it was even more so to understand how talented you are. Because, you know, if you visit your websites and look at the presentations and the lectures and just look at the base stuff that you've come up with, that's one thing. But, like, if you visit the what do you call the one sheets or the paper presentations or whatever the kids do with music.
Sure.
Paper slide music videos. And you've written songs for all different content levels, and now you're working on these 50 states, and you got the flipping the classroom stuff, and which, by the way, I think is funny because I keep wanting to say the flipping classroom. anyway, my point is that the 50 states. What was amazing was you showed the process, and you know, doing the with the metronome, and part of the banjo, then the part with the drums, then combining it all and the different parts and all that stuff, and it's just amazing. One of the things I've heard lots of these different songs, like I said, tell me a little bit about why you focus on the music. What is it about music? I know you got a background in music, which obviously makes that nice. It would be bad if you didn't.
Right.
Playing. But tell me about the idea with music. What is it that you see its role in the classroom?
Well, I truly believe, you know, just if we take today's conversation about education, most people are saying, oh, we have to have STEM career. Everything's about science and math. We need engineers. Right. We need scientists in order to drive us into the 21st century and keep the... I truly believe we need artists. That art is sort of the... We talk about reaching your potential as a human being. I think a lot of that goes back to reaching our potential as artists in terms of creators and expressing ourselves and expressing what it means to be a human and the human condition. I think that's the fundamental human experience, you know, being
Excellent.
An artist. We're all born to be artists, and school talks us out of it. So my real passion in bringing music into content areas that are way above, well, the feedback I used to get, I don't get this much anymore. I don't know why, maybe because I've done enough, but the feedback I used to get is like, well, that's baby stuff. Music and that's, you know, getting students to move around or even read lyrics, that is really elementary kind of stuff. Because I created music when I was teaching. I used to create music for my AP economics class. Those are 18-year-olds.
Right.
Those are kids, you know, and they're also human beings. And music is a common language that we all share and that most, you know, 99.9% of the people on this planet dearly love. So we can't ignore the power of something like that in getting, you know, packaging information, jingles and popular songs. It packages information and just directs it or directly injects it into your brain. And some things, you know, you hear a song twice and then 20 years later you hear it again and it brings you back to that 20 year ago kind of. It has this amazing power. And my passion is to bring that power in right into the classroom and hand that power to teachers to really engage students, and then have them hand that power to students to get engaged in learning in really deep ways that promote and allow them to be artists again. Allow them to do what they did for the first 3-4 years of their life, which is sing about everything, dance everything, draw everything, and absolutely love being alive and love learning.
I love it. That's awesome, because it's so easily driven out of them to say that, oh, I'm not going to do that anymore. But they'll, in a heartbeat, you'll get the kids to respond, and then they in turn will, just through others doing it, others will want to participate. And I love that. That's incredible, because we are in this bad direction right now where you see the elimination of a lot of fine arts programs, mm-hmm. where people are blaming, well, just because I can't keep this going. Well, it's like, I think you need to figure out how to make that go, because not everybody's going to be an engineer, right. And not everybody wants to be one, and there
not
are these
not everybody
aspects.
Should yeah
and
yeah,
not everybody
I mean,
should
come
exactly
on now. This country's about diversity. It's always been about diversity, and right. Making statements that we need every student to be ready to be an engineer or a scientist is a dangerous concept.
Oh, I think
my favorite people are artists.
That's
yeah.
Awesome. That is awesome. It's almost like we're going in that direction of, for some reason, just the thought of everybody wants to be a lawyer comes to mind here.
Yeah, right. So. Same kind of thing. Yeah, not everybody needs to be a lawyer.
No.
We have plenty of lawyers.
Thank you very much, yes.
Nothing against lawyers.
Yeah, nothing against lawyers,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
With that being said, I got to say something. This is really cool. When I watch your videos, you have a couple of them where your parents are highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be neat. Hopefully that they didn't like force you. All right, we got to be involved in this.
Yeah,
we raised you.
Yeah, we're in your next videos. Yeah.
that's got to be pretty cool to be able to have a role, have them have a role in these music videos that you're making about the 50 states. What do they think about it? And what's the type of feedback you get from people when they see those?
Man, you know, I get really positive feedback, of course, because it's an exceptional. I realize how exceptional that piece actually is, and. And the funny thing about it is I started thinking about the 50 States project back at the end, toward the end of summer. I couldn't get motivated to do it. It was sort of overwhelming, you know, starting something like that. You're just like, oh, I'll start tomorrow. I'll start. Because my first song was Pennsylvania. Like, I have to create, because all the songs have followed the same template, and I wanted it that way because it would be completely overwhelming without a template. If every song was just like, I don't know, we'll see if the first verse will be about, you know, this guy, and then, you know, like, so it's all the same template, although all the songs are hopefully quite different, but they all follow the same pattern. I couldn't get past, okay, I've got to do this, I've got to start this. As soon as I start, it'll be much easier. So I talked to my parents. I actually reached out to them and said, will you come into town and help me get this started? It'll be awesome to get you in the first couple songs, and it'll be a lot of fun. So they drove from – they live in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. So they drove, and they were going to spend 10 days.
Well, that's awesome.
So I you know, they were there, and that motivated me to be like, they're there to do this. So I got to go up. I got to get this work done. You know, like, they're waiting for me to do this work, so I have to get this done. So I went up, created the template, created the first song. We recorded it and had so much fun, and we were just laughing, absolutely laughing like crazy. Because they, you know, my dad plays a bunch of different instruments, and my mom plays a bunch of different stringed instruments. So we're collaborating, putting these things together, and it was a great time. They stayed for 5 weeks.
Wow.
And we recorded 4 songs.
Excellent.
We recorded Pennsylvania, Texas, Florida, and North Carolina. And we had so much fun. They went home for 3 weeks. And then, because I was traveling for a couple weeks in there, actually about 4 weeks. And then they came back and spent another 5 weeks. And we recorded 6 more songs in 5 weeks.
Wow.
So basically all the rest of Alta California in the American Southwest. It's just so great. And it's one of those things academically I understand. You know, I mean, think about this, that 20 years from now, watching those videos back will be so incredibly magical, and showing it to future generations of my family. I mean, just,
most definitely.
Just an incredible experience. And I'm so fortunate that they're not only willing to do that, because both of them are very much, well, my dad is very much a Luddite. I think that's where I get some of my, not that I'm a Luddite, but some of my, you know, keep it simple type of mentality. But he is as much off the grid as he can possibly be. But now he's on YouTube, you know, doing all this crazy stuff. It's just it's a funny dichotomy. But they're just amazing people, and I get a lot of really positive feedback. People saying things like, I hope you understand how incredible it is that you have parents that would do that and that can do that, and how incredible it is. And I do realize that, and I value it so much. You know, after leaving the university to do this work, it was sort of a risk, right? You know, it's I'm leaving this thing to do this much more speculative work that I'm very passionate about, so it's all good. I wouldn't trade anything for those first 10 songs that we recorded. Anything in the world. It was an incredible experience. They don't know this, but I'm going to bring two or three songs with me home for Christmas. So I'm going back to Tennessee, back to Knoxville for Christmas and spending probably a couple weeks. I'm going to bring a couple songs with me, and I'm going to get my sister and my niece and my mom and my dad to contribute on those. So we'll have
multiple things.
And then they're going to come back in February for another 5 weeks, and we're going to hopefully I'll be in the 25 to 30 song range by February.
Right.
Probably not, but that's coming up pretty soon. I'll do the best I can, though. But absolutely incredible. Major positive feedback, and I am incredibly fortunate, and I realize that.
That's awesome. Because I look at that, and it's really neat. And in the words you use before to explain what people say to you, that's amazing, and to be able to have that opportunity and for them to be able to do it, just like you said. So yeah. I enjoy watching those specifically.
Thank you. And you have to get to a point, I think, that me as a kid, a kid of my parents, you have to get to a maturity point where you can cross the barrier of, it's my parents, and I'm doing my own thing.
Right.
You know, I just recently got past that. It's a hard thing to get past because, you know, you feel like you're roped in by your past, and I want to do my own thing, and I want to be my own person. But then when you let that go and you let your parents back in and realize that they are human beings, you know, and they're talented and they bring a lot to the table, that's where the real amazing magic can happen.
That's awesome. Keep doing it. That's mm-hmm. cool. We're kind of getting to the close now, and what I wanted to...
But I have so much more to say.
Awesome. All right. So what's funny is I'm getting ready to ask you. So what is it you'd like to talk about that we haven't talked about?
No. Are we at that point?
We're at that point, yes.
Well, I think that... there's just so much. I mean, musically, allow students to be artists, allow students to create, of course. And I feel very passionate, of course, that I want teachers to start digging back in to their artistic selves. One of the things that I'm very skeptical of, I'm going to end on a positive note, but I'm going to go skeptical and then I'm going to try to turn it out.
That'll work.
So one of the things that I'm very skeptical of is our obsession with technology. I think one of the things that we're going to realize not too many years from now is that technology, having students, little kids, I see little kids sitting with an iPad playing some sort of app video game, of having, you know, this character on the screen jump right. over things. And, you know, like they're just sitting there just fixated on this screen and jumping. When I'm all in my head, I'm thinking, go outside and jump over something, you know. But we're glued to these things. Kids are glued to television. We're glued to their iPads or whatever their devices. They're glued to their screens in the back seats of the cars. You know, they're in the back.
Oh yeah.
I think it's an addiction that we're going to find out that we've created something pretty dangerous here pretty soon. One of the things that I'm interested in is trying to, but also realizing that there can be incredibly motivating factors with the use of technology. So trying to walk the line, also bringing in that kind of human spirit and artistic nature. And that's why I am not a visual artist, but I absolutely love, and I think it's very powerful and important for me to take these whiteboards, a stack of whiteboards, and draw this information on it. It forces me to create unique art. It might not be the most beautiful handwriting. I might be using rectangles to express things, but that is true art. I took a canvas. I made completely unique brushstrokes to that canvas. And I think a lot of times with templates and technology, we get away from that human artistic spirit of sitting down with a whiteboard and drawing something and making a mistake and wiping through it and getting right. the ink on your hand and rubbing your neck and getting it on your neck. This artistic, what it means to be human, chiseling on walls, now we're handing students these screens and saying, here, create something, but just drop some pictures in this template. It won't take but a couple minutes, and then we'll project that. It's getting away from the process of creation and promoting sort of assembly instead of creation, because those are two very different things. You know, assembling a product is not the same thing as making those mistakes and looking at it from a different perspective and then, you know, taking a picture or filming it and then watching it back and be like, how can I change that? That's the process of an artist. You know, dropping something into a template is sending the wrong message. And I think that handing a teacher a set of whiteboards, having them draw out their art on those whiteboards and explain what they drew, and then handing those same whiteboards to students and saying, "I want to see your art." I think that's where we need to go.
That's awesome.
Too often, we're as adults, you know, we're the same thing with the kids. You know, the idea that it's but what can you do with that, right? Mm-hmm. And where, well, you can do a lot with that. And part of it is expressing, using the brain to help you figure out how to, you know, overcome whatever the problem is, troubleshoot, whatever. And we all do it differently. And I think, you know, using the arts that way is just amazing. And what you said, I mean, that whiteboard is a new canvas. And, you know, they can make mistakes. They can make themselves look goofy and take chances. And it's a great part of using the brain that I think... And I think the electronics tend to shut down on us because in many ways, why create it when you can go out there and find it in the never reaches of the web?
Sure.
So that's it. That's awesome. What I'd like you to be able to do in finishing up here, my voice is cracking. That's good. I should have done this with a video. That's what I was going to say.
This conversation would be much more efficient in a video, but that's okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm having fun.
So am I. Where can people find you on the web? And what I'll do is the information that you give me, I'll be putting it in the liner notes that happen. So go ahead and tell them a little bit about where we can find you.
Okay, so I'm on Twitter, and my Twitter is called Handle.
That works for me.
My Twitter name, I guess, is at Pocket Lodge, like put Lodge in your pocket kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And then one of my YouTube accounts with all my state songs and some other things is Pocket Lodge as well, so YouTube/Pocket Lodge. My main website is lodgemccammon.com. It's LODGEMCCAMMON.com. And a lot of our Flip Classroom resources that are, of course, free and on YouTube is on our Flip Classroom channel on YouTube, which is Flipped Training. So YouTube/Flipped Training.
Awesome. Lodge, I appreciate you spending all this time. I enjoyed the class today. I enjoyed this conversation. It was fun. And I wish you the best. Have safe travels, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the heart of Georgia Precinct.